I've got plenty to be thankful for. I haven't got a great big yacht to sail from shore to shore. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for.
Oh, yeah. Bing Crosby had plenty to be thankful for, that's for sure. A song suggested for today by listener Kenneth Johnson.
No private car, no caviar, no carpet on my floor. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for.
And why did he suggest this song? Well, it's obvious, but he says it's a rare actual Thanksgiving song, and Bing makes some snide and funny remarks as he listens to a recording of himself and picks at a sumptuous Thanksgiving meal until he was reminded by his wise housekeeper that he has to fight for the things and people he should truly give thanks for.
I buy them all at the 5 and 10 cent store. Oh, I've got plenty to be thankful for.
And happy Thanksgiving, everyone. That music is from our Music to Cook By mixtape, which you can link to on our website and listen to in full after today's show, of course. But you can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show for your afternoon cooking pleasure. And here's to you, everyone hard at work in the kitchen today and maybe a little flummoxed by the enormity of the job and the enormity of the bird. But never fear, help is at hand. Brooklyn writer Melanie Rahak worked for a year at the Brooklyn Locavore restaurant, Applewood, and she will share some tips that she picked up that can maybe make today a little bit less stressful. She put her experiences and some recipes in her new book, Eating for Beginners: An Education in the Pleasures of Food, from Chefs, Farmers, and One Picky Kid. And those of you who've been listening all month know she's been with us every Thursday in November to talk about food. So welcome for one last visit, Melanie, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Brian. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
And we will disclose here that we did pre-record this visit. So maybe, Melanie, you are actually listening while you cook, too. How weird is that?
I think it's very weird. And if I had to make a guess, I'd say I'm probably in my pajamas and I have children running around. And I'm thinking it'd be so much nicer to be on the radio right now than cooking in my kitchen.
You mean you're not typically cooking already at this hour on Thanksgiving Day?
Oh, no. I'm sure I will probably have been cooking for, you know, probably since the night before, knowing me. But somehow it will not all get done until just before the guests walk in, because that seems to be the way it goes every year.
Do you like to listen to music while you cook?
I do. I think, you know, I firmly believe that a little music goes a long way, especially in the kitchen, to kind of getting your energy up and keeping things moving. So,
do you have some favorites to cook to?
I have several. I think, you know, I can kind of go one of two ways. If it's sort of a rainy, gloomy, you know, kind of a thing, maybe in the evening, so this might not necessarily apply to Thanksgiving, but I'm a big fan of Leonard Cohen's famous Blue Raincoat. Always kind of sets the tone.
It's like getting depressed while you cook, right?
I know. So not good for Thanksgiving morning. Let me just reiterate that. But my big high energy song is a Fats Waller. It's called Looking Good, Feeling Bad, But Looking Good. And I think for me, it sort of encapsulates, you know, that moment in the kitchen on a holiday morning when you're running around like a crazy person, but you know that by 4 o'clock or whatever time you're having dinner, you're going to have it all together. The table will be set. You will maybe have showered, but if not, you will look like you've showered. So, you know, you'll be feeling bad but looking good. So,
look like you've showered. Yeah. Here's another one from our mixtape, suggested by our It's a Free Country editor, Anna Sale, who happens to come from, well, you'll figure it out,
West Virginia. Oh, my home. West Virginia's where I belong.
And I guess since people travel so frequently to the place where they're originally from on Thanksgiving, it gets the sentimental juices flowing. And I guess, Melanie, we could have probably gotten 50 song suggestions from people from all 50 states.
Probably. That would be a good idea. I can see how that West Virginia one, too, has a certain meditative quality that would kind of get you through the stirring or the whatever, you know, you've got to get done.
So how much of what you learned at the restaurant translated to at home for an industrial cooking day like this?
Well, I think a lot, sort of in tangible and intangible ways. I mean, for me, the biggest kind of improvement that I came away with is that I just absolutely no longer freak out in my kitchen at home, because after you've been in a restaurant during the dinner shift and, you know, there are, say, 50 people in the dining room and, you know, it's a restaurant, so they're all ordering different things and you've got to keep track of it all and, you know, you're cooking fish and you're making soup and you're making sides. I have to say that, you know, cooking dinner, even for 18, which is I think how many are at my house for Thanksgiving
wow.
this year, doesn't seem that hard because they're all just eating what you make.
Is that what made you freak out the most, the sheer volume of what's in your kitchen at one time?
In the restaurant, you mean? Or at home?
At home, mostly?
I think I was very worried about something not happening correctly. I spent a lot of time focusing on the details and, you know, worrying about were people going to like it and had I put the right amount in and this and that. And, you know, there was a lot of room for worry, which once I had cooked in the restaurant just seemed ridiculous to me to worry about anything when you're, you know, making dinner.
And that was your worry in the restaurant, too, that people might not like it and they're going to say, who cooked this? And they're going to come storming into the kitchen.
Yeah, my worry in the restaurant primarily was that people would do that and then they would say, why is a writer cooking my food? You know, where's the chef? So, yes. But, I think in the restaurant, you know, it's very inspiring to see all those people back in the kitchen cooking, and nobody does freak out. They get it done. The plates come out, and it's, you know, you realize that it's possible to do that and produce this really gorgeous food. So I think...
And, of course, at home, there is just the one menu, unless your picky eater problem we talked about a couple of weeks ago
yes.
is a factor. Or if you're cooking for people with different kinds of tastes. So I wonder if you take a restaurant approach to customizing everyone's meal. You know, do you survey your guests for who's a vegetarian, who's celiac, who's this
right.
thing and that thing?
Well, I mean, certainly if we're having people over for dinner, and this is not Thanksgiving specific, but, you know, we'd sort of check ahead of time and say, you know, is your girlfriend a vegetarian? Or especially, you know, if someone's bringing someone that we've never met. But, I mean, I would say generally then we just try to make one meal that will fit everybody, which fortunately doesn't ever seem to be too hard to do. So, you know, that's a huge difference. Making six different things versus making one thing is, you know, makes such a difference just in the number of things you have to think about, the number of pans you have to have on the stove. And, you know, just to only have four burners at home instead of like six or eight or, you know, this and an oven and all this stuff at the restaurant, it just all seems so much more manageable. So,
happy Thanksgiving, everyone. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Melanie Rahek, author of Eating for Beginners, An Education in the Pleasures of Food from Chefs, Farmers, and One Picky Kid, the last of her weekly Thursday visits to the Brian Lehrer Show, timed, no accident, to end on Thanksgiving Day. And at the same time, we're listening to some samples from our Thanksgiving Day mixtape, music that people like to cook to, that WNYC staff and listeners have suggested, such as... This is by Eddie Hazel, called Frantic Moment, suggested by one of our listeners who goes by Super F88. And Super F88 writes, this is what would happen if Jimi Hendrix had fallen for funk. Multi-layered and perfectly cooked like a good Thanksgiving meal. So, Melanie, are there tricks that you learned in the restaurant when you worked at Applewood? You mentioned, for example, wet paper towels to keep the cutting board in place.
Right. And I have to say, actually, I do that at home now. This is something I had never thought about, that, you know, when you're cutting on your cutting board and it's sliding all over your counter, there is, in fact, a way to stick it down in an impermanent sense, and that is to wet paper towels and just slap them on the counter and then put the board on top of them. So there was that. I learned a lot about chopping, which used to be incredibly time consuming for me and was one of those things that I knew I was bad at, but I couldn't figure out how to fix it.
Does anybody still use those old choppers that are kind of curved on the bottom and you grip them not like a knife? I don't even know what they're called. And then, you know, you had the old wood bowl put the tuna fish in.
I think
that
it's
kind
called a mezzaluna. But no, I mean, I'm sure people still use them, but I don't use one at home. So there was a lot about chopping and a lot about, you know.
So what about chopping? I want to know.
Oh, well, a lot about, you know, moving the food and not the knife. So, you know, if you're chopping, say, a carrot, you know, it's much more time consuming if you're sort of moving your hand with the knife and you're picking it up and down rather than just pushing the food through with your other hand. I also learned that...
Where do you grip your knife, by the way? This is an issue, isn't it?
Where do I grip my knife? Sort of in the middle of the handle, as opposed to...
Not by the blade.
Oh, not by the blade. Was that a trick question?
No, I mean kind of up more
up.
Toward
oh,
the blade.
Yes,
some
yes,
people
yes.
do.
Yeah. Oh, I think... No, no,
you
I
know,
don't, but
put
I
put the finger on the top of the blade.
Right. No, I'm firmly on the handle. I also... I mean, I have small hands. I would imagine that might make a difference, but I never saw anyone in the kitchen, you know, put their hand that near to the blade of the knife. So.
All right. I'm done with chopping,
okay.
I promise.
Okay.
You were going to go on to what?
I was just going to say, and this is sort of chopping related, but one of the things I learned is that actually, you know, spending a little more time in the beginning makes it faster later. So, for example, when you're trying to take the skin off a squash, which is something I imagine a lot of people are probably doing today on Thanksgiving since there's a lot of squash, you know, it actually saves time if you take the time at the beginning to cut the top and the bottom off so that they're flat so you can stand it up on your cutting board and then cut straight down from top to bottom, which is something I never... knew before. So there were a lot of little things like that.
You mentioned before that you cook ahead sometimes on Wednesday night for Thanksgiving. How much cooking ahead is done in the restaurant?
Well, I think Applewood probably is different from a lot of restaurants because the menu changes every day. So there's not that much ahead as in, you know, at the beginning of the week for the end of the week. I mean, there's ahead as in earlier that day, because obviously the kitchen staff is arriving long before the dinner service begins. But, you know, certainly things like soups and braised meats and things like that that keep very well are done ahead. And sometimes we'll carry over, you know, for an extra day if there's some left over.
Do you like it as a strategy for the home cook?
To cook ahead, yes. I'm a big believer in cook ahead, and I'm also a big believer in cook ahead and keep in the freezer so that when you have those nights where you just can't deal, you can open your freezer and there's, you know, a nice bolognese or something in there that you can just take out.
How about an equipment secret? I would guess that working in a restaurant, you got exposed maybe to some piece of equipment, and I don't even know what I'm thinking of. I'm just, you know, speculating here, that there is some piece of equipment that you discovered that you didn't have at home, that you go, I never thought of that, but it's just like professional, you know, utensil of some kind that then you went out and got.
Right. Well, actually, there were several things. One was and I don't know how we keep getting back to chopping, but one was a sharpening stone for my knives, which is something that kind of didn't even exist for me. And of course,
you don't have to wait for the knife sharpening truck to come around
exactly.
and ring the bell.
And the other is the mandolin, which was something I was always afraid of, the sort of slicing, you know, the long board. It looks sort of like a grater, and then you hold the vegetable generally, and you can, you know, do these paper thin slices, or if you have the right attachment, you can make sort of a julienne or whatever.
I think there was a mandolin in that song we heard.
Yes, exactly. The West Virginia mandolin. And that was the thing that's always seemed to me very kind of, you know, I don't want to use this. And in fact, when I did start using it at the restaurant, I, you know, spent a lot of time cutting up my thumb and fingers and removing my fingernails with it.
Ouch.
But in fact, once you have the hang of it, it does make stuff so easy, like to make a great potato gratin and do all these thin slices. You know, you can knock them out in no time instead of trying to chop them with the knife.
So. Now, there's not just one cook usually in the restaurant. Is having company while you cook a good idea?
I think so. I thought that before the restaurant. And actually, I just saw David Shea, the chef at Applewood, the other day, and we were all talking about how it is actually a learned art, or either you're a natural at it or you have to learn how to talk while cooking. You know, there are definitely people who, if they're focused on the cooking, can't do the talking. And I think, you know, that was another part of my evolution, is that after being in a kitchen with all these other people at the restaurant, I learned how to carry on a conversation, you know, while doing all this other stuff. And I think it probably makes me a better dinner party host now.
And it certainly can be a social experience to cook with friends.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Sometimes I prefer to cook alone. I just get into my zone with the process and my music or whatever I'm listening to, and the cookbook if I need it. And I would just rather be by myself. How unusual is that?
I don't think that's unusual. I mean, I definitely have times when I am like that. I mean, it becomes a sort of meditative quality, or if I have a bad day, it's a really great thing to get into the kitchen and follow this process, as you say, and just produce something. You know, you have something that you've accomplished by the time you finish the meal, which is a great feeling. So I think there are sort of both sides. I mean, I think if you have people over for dinner, as I'm sure anyone listening knows, you know, they always end up in the kitchen with you, even if you try to keep them in the living room having drinks or whatever it is. You know, everyone comes to the kitchen. So I think that's a wonderful social event, but I also think there's a side of cooking that is a great solitary, you know, thing.
That makes me feel better. So we're almost out of time with Melanie Rahak, author of Eating for Beginners, an Education in the Pleasures of Food from Chefs, Farmers, and One Picky Kid. She's been with us every Thursday all through November, culminating here on Thanksgiving Day. And so maybe one parting shot for our Thanksgiving hosts listening today. You write in the book, about 5 years into our marriage, I had realized that one of the primary reasons to have dinner with friends is to learn things about your spouse that would never come up if the two of you were alone. Good things, I hope?
Yes, I think good things, and more than good things, I think really sort of fascinating things, interesting things, you know, voices they can imitate or something that happened to them when, you know, they were children, just these stories. I think, you know, and since it's Thanksgiving, you know, let's be honest, that's one of the reasons why you get your family and friends together around the table, because everyone drags out their stories and you find out things about your aunt that you never knew, or, you know, your aunt tells an embarrassing story about your mother, which makes you suddenly realize, you know, something about your own childhood or yourself. So I think, you know, as much as Thanksgiving is about the food and the cooking, it's also about what you learn when you put everyone together around a table.
And I guess, folks, if you want to know more about what Melanie learned about her husband, you're just going to have to read the book, Eating for Beginners. Thank you again for doing this series. It's been really wonderful.
Thank you, Ryan. It's been really fun.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. And
happy Thanksgiving
out there.
To everyone out there. And we'll go out with another track from our Thanksgiving Day mixtape. This is going to be Tyrone Davis, Can I Change My Mind, suggested by Brian Lehrer Show producer Jody Avergan. Don't change your mind about what you decided to listen to today. And remember, if you want to hear all the songs on our Thanksgiving Day mixtape, suggested by many of you listeners, music to cook by, go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Take it, Tyrone.
You're the girl. She fooled me this time. She acted like I was the last thing on her mind. I would like to start all over.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.